So hi there. Today I'm here with PJ Metz. He's a program manager over at GitHub. How are you doing?
I'm great, Boz. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm super stoked to be here. I haven't done a podcast or any kind of thing like this in a long while. It's one of my favorite things to do is talk to people. So this is great.
Yeah, it turns out it is my favorite thing too. I recently started, so let's see where that goes.
Yeah.
So you're a program manager at GitHub. So what's that about? What do you do at GitHub?
So I'm on the education team at GitHub, and GitHub Education has been around for coming on, I want to say 10 years, 11 years maybe. But the idea was, as GitHub was getting more and more popular and being used by more and more developers, there was a thought, well, twofold, we want more students to be using the product because, you know, we think it's a good product and we think students should have the opportunity to learn what's being used in industry, but also it helps build more fans. The earlier someone sees your product and the more they get to use it and see how helpful it is, the more they're going to want to stick around with you. And, you know, GitHub's just general story in the tech world becoming almost a It always sounds so cocky to say it, but becoming like a cornerstone of developer tools and something that everyone knows how to use or at least familiar with is super cool. And so making sure that students know how to use it, because it wasn't being taught in classrooms, because there is a gap in traditional college classrooms between what you're learning there and what you'll actually be doing once you're inside the industry. Yeah, you can't teach kids everything in those 4 years. You want to lay some great theory and some foundations and some understanding about the ins and outs of everything. You don't have time to make sure everyone knows how to use Flutter while you're there, you know? So like,
I think there is like also a big gap between learning how to program and learning computer science that right. always gets like conflated and stuff. Yeah. So basically the program that you're managing, that's the one that's giving that student pack out.
Not quite. So the way the education team works is there's several of us, and we have, I think there's about 9 of us now. We each have a very specific role. I'm the program manager of student communities, but really what that means is I'm in charge of a group of kids called campus experts. And campus experts are students all over the world who are organizing technical events in order to bridge that gap between academia and industry. So there's some really motivated kids all over, 30% of our campus experts are in India. And we have a bunch of them in places like Pakistan and Sri Lanka and, South Korea, the UK, Germany, the United States, Latin America, worldwide. And these kids were already organizing hackathons and organizing workshops and taking knowledge that they knew and understood and sharing it with fellow students. And so we sought to kind of formalize that and say, hey, if you're teaching people about developer tools, we want to support that. And what I love about the program and what really got me excited to come and take part in it is that it's tech agnostic. It doesn't have to be just GitHub. We're not saying go and teach people how to use GitHub or Actions or Issues or program management or project management or whatever inside of GitHub. We say, just go teach your community. I have kids who are doing accessibility for video games in Scotland. We have a student who's out there working on video game tech and, you know, doing all this cool stuff. And what she wants is to make it more accessible for deaf people. And she's a campus expert. So she doesn't run events on how to use GitHub. She helps run events on video game development. And so we want to support these kids with what they're already doing because they're spreading skills to other kids around them. And that makes all those kids more likely to be able to get a job in the field that they want to work in. And so for me, I have to do is enable them.
Yeah, I think like developer tools in general, and particularly Git and GitHub, is like such a foundation that you just have to do if you're working in tech, right? It doesn't matter what you do with it, but chances are that you hit Git or GitHub.
Exactly. Yeah. They might be, we don't require them to do Git and GitHub, but almost always every campus expert does a learning how to use GitHub event at least once a year, because a bunch of freshmen show up and have no idea what a GitHub is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but eventually it will lead there.
That's right. Yep.
Probably that's also a little bit of intentional.
You get it. Yeah, there's a business reason and there's a helping people reason. And like, it's great when those two parts can align, you know? Yeah. I just get to go, I just want to help people and I want to enable students to make their resumes better and all that kind of stuff. That's what matters to me personally. And then what matters to my company is people using GitHub, obviously.
Yeah. Like when I remember my time at university, that's more than 2 days ago, I guess now.
at least.
I guess a lot has changed, right? Maybe people are uncertain about the general economic uncertainty. They have different tools for learning. Now they have access to AI and stuff like Cluely. Maybe they cheat a lot. So how does all that come into play when you're a student right now?
Life is hard for a student right now. And I think, you know, I graduated college in 2008 and I didn't have a computer science degree. In fact, I was a high school English teacher for 11 years before I switched into tech in 2021. But I remember getting out of college in 2008, 2009, and that was the global recession and house prices were dropping. And it was, I remember I showed up in the town that I was moving to and I applied at every high school and no one was hiring an English teacher. So I just worked in a bar. I had a master's degree and I was a bartender.
Oh, that's so unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, I made it. Like, I'm doing fine now, but I remember all that uncertainty. Yeah, yeah. So, based on a few key indicators. But yeah, I remember being afraid and being nervous and being like, how am I supposed to get a job? And looking around, and a lot of people like me in the same boat. And I feel like now it's even more pronounced that it's hard to get a job right now. And with AI, as a sort of tool that, generally speaking, AI was just kind of released to the public and was like, look at this. And it was adopted really quickly by a lot of different people. One of the things that I worry about is not necessarily AI taking jobs, but students working with AI in a way that is counterproductive to their future abilities. You know, I think AI is a really powerful tool. I mean, my company makes Copilot. I think Copilot's an amazing tool. I've played around with agentic mode with it. I've played around with the chat. It's helped me understand these code bases that are brand new to me. It helps me figure out what's going on. But I always know, I personally, when I'm engaging with something like Copilot, I treat it like a really eager to please super junior developer who gets a lot of things wrong, but they're really excited to be there. And so they're like, oh, I got this. Here's this PR. I made it for you. And it's like, well, there's a few mistakes here, but you got the right idea. And if it can save me some time, that's useful. But if you don't recognize that AI has its problems and that even though it says things really confidently, there's zero confidence in it. It's all a computer's best guess about what could be the answer. If you treat it like a guess, and if you treat it like with a little bit of skepticism, I feel like that's really the way that AI should be used right now. Anyone who's taking answers, copy pasting it, seeing if it runs once and pushing it to prod is going to have a really bad time.
I think there's also like a point of overusing it, right? I mean, do you remember any phone numbers? Right? Probably not, because now you have a smartphone. And I think the same effect is taking place in AI, right? When I use a day of just reviewing code instead of writing it with Copilot or other tools, I feel like, okay, can I even write code anymore?
Is this even possible? Have I forgotten everything about my job?
Yeah, probably, yes. That should also be an effect, right? And the confidence thing that you were talking about, like,
it's really wild. They did a study with some young kids, and they had two groups of people. They were experts in a field and people who were told to lie about being an expert, and they asked the kids afterward who was right, and overwhelmingly the kids always picked a person who sounded confident. But an expert in a field, if you ask anyone who's an expert in any field about what their field is like, they'll always be like, oh, well, it's complicated, or, oh, like, it's not really cut and dry, or it's not one way or the other. But a con man will tell you 100% this is the answer. Don't worry. Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
Ignore
everything. This is not reality, but this is also not what people want to hear.
Yeah. So if we've got large language models that can use natural language to talk to us and they sound really confident, we're more likely to believe that. Like, it is biologically wired in us to believe that more. And so we need to be aware of that when we're talking to these large language models and to these different AI products out there, that it's going to be really confident, but it can hallucinate and it can make mistakes. And yeah, if you're not absolutely careful, you're going to get taken advantage by a con man robot.
So I just wanted to get back to one thing that you said, like coming from an English teacher background, ending up in a bar and then ending up at GitHub. So how did all of that happen?
Yeah. So in college, I started out college like not knowing what I wanted to do. And eventually I realized I wanted to get paid to read books with people. And then the next step beyond that was realizing that's what an English teacher is. I pick books.
Love
and it. I read it with a bunch of kids and I teach them how to understand the book and how to take where they are in understanding, you know, literature and media and whatever, and help them get a little better at it. And that's what I realized I wanted to do. It was like 2005. I was like, I want to be an English teacher. And it was a lightning bolt in my brain. And I just did it. I went and got my undergrad degree in English. I got a bachelor's, and then I got a master's in secondary English education. And from there, I moved to a town called Melbourne, Florida, which is near the Space Coast. So
that's on nice not days, in Australia, Melbourne?
Not Australia, yeah. Melbourne, Florida is about 30 minutes south of Kennedy Space Center. And so it's really cool. All the time, you could just see rockets going up into the air.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
It's a cool vibe. Melbourne's a cool town. But I moved there. Like I said, I couldn't find a teaching job at first and was just a bartender, which is what I'd been doing in college. And I eventually got a teaching job. I really liked it. I did 4 years at a school there. I moved to Orlando, Florida, which is where I'm from originally. And I started teaching there. Briefly, I went and taught English as a second language in South Korea. So I went from teaching 17-year-olds The Great Gatsby and Macbeth to teaching 4-year-olds the days of the week and asking how's the weather. But I loved it. I got to live in South Korea for a year and a half. My wife went with me and we just had the best time. But all of that, I come back to America and I just taught high school again. And I thought I was just going to do that until I retired. And this is funny. It always starts a pandemic.
Okay.
It's funny because when I say, oh, then the pandemic hit, everyone's like, oh. And I think a lot of people think they know what the next step of the story is. Teaching became hard. I became disillusioned. No, I actually really still wanted to teach. And I did teach for so pandemic hits and we go fully virtual for the last quarter of the school year. And then it's summer. And then that next school year, I was still teaching. But what happened was, a friend of mine, we were doing these Zoom happy hours at the time. Of course, that's when Zoom got crazy popular. Everyone had an account and we would hang out online and just chat with each other, because those friends from Melbourne, Florida that I had made ended up moving all across America, Colorado and California, blah, blah. And it was kind of one of those small silver linings from those early days of the pandemic and the lockdown, is that I found time to reconnect with those people in a more purposeful way. So on one of those calls, a friend of mine was working at Red Hat and he revealed that he was being paid a lot less than his colleague who was at the same level. And the amount he was being underpaid, he was being paid less than his colleague. That amount was more than I made in an entire year as a teacher.
Wow.
Florida is very bad for teacher pay. It is like 48th in the nation for teacher pay. I had 10 years of experience. I had a master's degree and I was still making less than like 50K a year in Florida, which was about, it was a little above like the median for there. Like I was okay, but I had to be careful too. And I just knew retirement was going to be like, we'll see when we get there. So I made a joke about how my friend was being underpaid by the amount that I get paid every year. And I made a joke about that. And another friend on the call goes, you know, PJ, you could probably work in tech. And I was like, no, I can't work in tech. And he goes, well, there's this position called developer relations. And the whole point of DevRel is to teach people how to use your company's product. And he worked at Microsoft at the time. And he was like, I teach people how to use .NET. I teach people how to use like Azure services. And he just told me what his job was. And I was like, okay, but like, I know your history. You went to school for computer science and you worked on cruise ship communication satellites and you do all this really difficult. I didn't think I could do any of that. He goes, PJ, I think you could learn to code. And I'd never considered it, never even thought about it. I tried it once and it was difficult and I gave up. It was the sixth grade. Someone gave me Visual Basic and I was like, this sucks. I don't want to do this.
It still sucks, by the way.
Yeah, Visual Basic is still not easy to use. So. Oh my god. So he says, like, I think you could do it. And I was looking at, you know, the summer of 2020. I had nothing to do. And he's like, I have nothing to do. What if we hung out and I guided you towards some resources? And I said, all right. So we started hanging out. And he gave me a couple Scott Hanselman videos. He was, like I said, a .NET guy. So he taught me C#, showed me these Scott Hanselman videos. I started learning there. And then I started learning on Codecademy. And then he starts introducing me to people he works with and people he knows in the DevRel industry. I met another person in DevRel who I started building Twitter bots with. And it just kind of snowballed. I just kept meeting people. They'd be like, oh, what are you doing? I'd be like, oh, I do this. And I learned online too. I'd get on Twitch and I would stream myself learning methods and functions and just C# and messing up every single day, just constantly.
So in the end, it's all about connecting with people.
It was 100% connecting with people. It's always networking. And every job opportunity I've had has been from someone I knew who met me and thought about me when a job opportunity came up.
And so that's really cool.
It's funny. I tell people, like, when you think about the technical skills necessary for a job, so many people in the world have the technical skills necessary. And so often a job is not going to hire just for technical skills. They're going to hire for a mix of things. And if someone knows you and has heard of you and has seen what you've been creating in public, that's more likely to get you a little further in the door than just pure technical skills. You know, it takes a lot to be known for amazing technical skills. It takes a lot less to be known as a person who's kind of doing things in public and working with other people.
So that's a very impressive story, actually. So I love it how all the parts like just move together to work out for you, like being a teacher and then finding a job teaching people in tech.
Right.
So right. And now, like, everyone is talking about AI and Copilot and stuff. And I mean, it is impressive, but we often forget that it is a large language model. And like, mm-hmm. from the perspective of the model, it doesn't matter if it spills out English or Visual Basic or whatever. So it's for it, it's just another, really not programming, but real language, right? Is there, for you as someone with a linguistic background, is there some special perspective that you have on those models?
I think one of the funniest things to come out of it, and a lot of people have been talking about this lately too, is how the way that AI responds to people is starting to change the way that we communicate. There's a great linguist that I follow on Instagram, and I always forget his name, but he has a book coming out called Algo Speak. That I'm very excited to read, but it's all about the different ways that just the internet is changing our language. He talks a lot about...
You're absolutely right. This is the way how it happens.
Right? People who think on TikTok, people have to self-censor on TikTok. They don't say kill on TikTok anymore. They say unalive. And it started as like kind of a joke to get around your video being like blocked or whatever. But it starts creeping into the real world. Unalived
by the moderators.
Exactly, right? And so now people are using it. It starts out, you're using it ironically, and then it starts to get used more often, and then it just becomes real, and it becomes normal speak. So with LLMs, they love numbered lists, they love M dashes, and they love semicolons. As a former English and emoji, as a former English teacher, I loved the semicolon. I wanted my students to use more semicolons all the time. And I what's happening the now, the M dash is so good.
Yeah, but it's so cool. I stopped using it because people thought.
And that's what's happening. It's correct grammar. It is a tool that's always been in our belt. But when you trained these large language models, you trained them on proper, great, good English. And now we're getting to the point where like, oh, well, that looks like it was written by A. It's like, no, I did it. I just like an M dash, or I like a semicolon, or I like to write with, I love big words. I'm a big word guy. I had a friend in college who called them $10 words. Love them. But now I'm starting to sound like AI. And so I'm going to have to adjust and change the way I speak, I guess, and write in order to make sure that people don't think it's AI. I don't use AI for a lot. Except for maybe at like the very beginning of something when I need like a list of ideas. Mm-hmm. And I use Copilot all the time to try and understand code bases. But like ChatGPT and like the other products, I don't use as often because I have my own style of writing that I've been working on for the past like 39 years of my life, really. So I don't want to outsource that to ChatGPT. I want it to be uniquely my voice still. And I encourage all of you out there to please find your own writing voice and don't let ChatGPT write for you because it's making everything sound like the same. And it's, I don't know how, it's the first time I read something from ChatGPT, I was like, oh man, that's wild. It sounds like a real person. But two more like generative stories later, I was like, nope, that's a robot. There's something in there that I can sense that's so hollow.
I can't really get my head around that, but it has a pattern. I just have not discovered that pattern yet. But, but you immediately notice, actually.
Yeah, you're like, something's off about this. And that's really useful because we have for Campus Experts. In fact, applications are live right now for Campus Experts here in July. We tell them not to get answers from ChatGPT for their responses because there's three questions we ask them about their community, about work they've done, and about themselves. And invariably, the kids, there's this, I keep going like a layer up. Okay, so there's this issue in education where people only care about the grade because the grade gets you the degree and the degree gets you the job, right? Yeah. And so the grade leads to the job. And so it doesn't matter if you know the material, it doesn't matter if you're good at the class. All that matters is the grade. So if all that matters is the grade and you cheat to get the grade, well, that's just guaranteeing you get the job, right? But when you get to the job, you have to know the stuff that you did. Yeah. And, you know, I have such a hard time, especially in like the humanities, because the point is not to learn how to write an essay. I don't write essays in my life. Most people do not write essays in their life. But what people do write are arguments. At work, you're going to have to convince, you're going to have to convince your boss that what you're doing is the right thing. You're going to have to convince somebody that this is the right path to take to accomplish this goal that you're working on. That's what an essay is. It's a series of arguments you're making. And when you make a good argument, then you can convince people to follow your lead. So if you didn't write the essay, then you didn't learn how to create an argument, and you're losing out on these skills that you need to interact with other people. So these degrees and learning and education, it shouldn't be about the grade, but because especially in the West, it has been so focused on the grade and the degree and the job, we're losing kids who don't understand that they need to be able to speak eloquently and need to be able to write eloquently And that's what the essay's for. I don't care if you can actually identify who the Christ figure is in Lord of the Flies. I care that you can read something, pull information out of it, and then synthesize that information in your own words.
Yeah, got it. That's a great way to put it, actually. So getting back to GitHub, GitHub is it has not always been part of Microsoft, right? They started as, I think it was a Ruby on Rails project back then. I think the front runner of enterprise integration back then probably was GitLab, but GitHub has caught up a lot, I guess, especially since they're part of Microsoft. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would be an interesting feature of GitHub that most people don't care about that, but you think deserves more attention?
My first tech job was at GitLab. I was on their education team in 2021 when I first got hired in the tech.
So you know both sides.
I know both sides. And as a GitHub employee, what I like about GitHub is it really feels tailored to the individual. Like, I can get started on GitHub immediately as an individual. There's all these resources for learning. There's all these places I can go. Everyone talks about it, and it seems like it's important and it's a standard. What I liked about GitLab when I was using it was the layered teams, where you would have groups and subgroups and subgroups, and that visually and mentally just made sense to me. But a GitHub product that I think is really important that a lot of people might not know about is it's really good project management tools. Like, if you've got a GitHub org and you've got all your repos organized in there and you set up your teams well and you set up a good project board, there's so much automation and so much clean integration with your direct code base that you're working on. I think a lot of people just don't know about how to utilize issues. And oh my God, issue forms is so cool. Oh, I didn't even know about it when I started.
So issue forms is actually where you can customize your forms that lead to an issue on GitHub. It's basically just markdown-ish something, but you can get it structurized after that.
I remember, so the initial create an issue was just a big blank box. And then they were like, look, here's issue templates. And it would tell you, here's some markdown. And you'd be like, fill in here, fill in here, fill in here.
Yeah.
Forms is exactly what it sounds like. It's a form you fill out. And after you fill it out, it makes the issue for you formatted correctly with the right labels attached. And if you've got some labels that are connected to GitHub Actions, it'll automate everything. It is so good. Issue forms all the time on my team and in Campus Experts. We use it for Campus Experts who want to propose an event that they want support for. It's gorgeous. Learning how to use that is a massive, massive time saver. I imagine an open source project that gets hundreds of issues a week of bug reports and complaints and please fixes. Forms would make their life a lot easier if they're not already using it.
Yeah. I mean, people contributing, they need guidelines, and that's true for open source projects, but that's also true for internal teams or stuff like
everything.
You just need to have your information at least a bit structured, better than a big blank white
canvas. Here's an empty box bug report, and it's just empty, and it's broken.
Well, it didn't work.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but it didn't work. And then inevitably, because I did community management at a cybersecurity company before I came here, and that was called Project Discovery, and they have open source cybersecurity tools. And one of my jobs was being the first person to comment on these issues and being like, oh, can you tell me more about the problem? And I'd have a list of questions. And I was like, we should have this up at the beginning, right? The bug report should have these questions listed.
Yeah.
It's a... invariably,
maybe nowadays you can use AI to extract it from the essay that you put in the white box.
There we go. Oh God, I love issue forms. Oh, it blew my mind when I first saw it.
So good. Yeah. Getting back to like the college kid or university kids that I think they are like reaching out to you also for not technical advice, but general things that they should take care of in university, some contacts they can utilize to advance their careers or something. What's the probably most general pattern that you notice and the most general advice that you could give them?
Yeah, I think one of the things that it feels like the at least in America, what I've noticed with students when I was a teacher is that pipeline of get the grades, get the degree, get the job. A lot of people believe that that's a pretty solid, easy pipeline. But what happens is get the degree, get the job. Like I said earlier, it's not pure technical skill that gets you the job. It is, I think a lot of people get frustrated because it's who you know, but who you know isn't a bad thing because anybody can go out into the community and start meeting people. There are meetups, there are online forums, there's so much community everywhere. That's going to be more helpful to you than the degree. The degree is like expected. Or a certification is expected. So you can't say, well, I got the degree, so why don't, I had a 3.92 GPA and I have a degree in computer science from a great university. Super cool. What can you do that the other person with a degree can't do? And that's where you differentiate yourself. Look how many people are coming out with degrees. So how do you differentiate yourself is you get involved. And you join a club, or you create a club, or you teach other people how to do what you've done. And in teaching other people what you've done, you actually strengthen your own knowledge. I loved the advice someone gave me once was after you do a project, I would build Twitter bots. After I built a Twitter bot, I was so frustrated with the process to actually get to the bot being deployed that someone was like, just write an article. Write the article you wish you had when you started the project that makes the process easier. And so I went back and I wrote a couple Dev2 articles about how to make a Twitter bot because there were assumptions being made about a person's level in all these documentation I saw and all these articles. It'd be like, go to your terminal. And I was like, what's a terminal? Because I was brand new to tech. So I love learning something, writing about that something and putting it out there and continuing to write about what you're learning, because not only are you helping other people learn, but you're strengthening your own understanding of what it is that you learned by teaching it to someone else. And you're now creating materials, right? And you're creating materials for other people to show that you know what you're talking about. So you're reaching an audience who learns, you're reaching an audience who wants to see people learning, and you're helping yourself. It's win-win-win every time.
Yeah,
make
absolutely.
Content after you learn something.
I mean, we said it before. It's about connecting with people, and I think there is so much so of a distinction between like computer science and programming. There's also a distinction between like a programmer and like a software developer, because as a programmer, mm-hmm. you are a mere implementer of things. That's probably right. Something that ChatGPT or Copilot will do in the future, but mm-hmm. as a developer, you have that systems thinking applied. You can understand other people, their arguments or essays, and then you can just translate like a business problem into the technical domain, right?
Yep. If the job was just writing the code, then it wouldn't matter who was in it. It's just a base level technical skill. But because the job is communicating with other people about what path to take with the code and about pointing out why this framework, this language, this decision is the right decision, you're going to be arguing your entire career with people. And not in a negative way, but you're going to be like trying to prove that this way of solving the problem is the right way. And the people who are successful at those jobs are the people who can do those non-technical things better. They're not soft skills. Like I've always, well, it's also, I haven't always hated the term soft skills, because one of the reasons I feel like I was able to be successful and get into DevRel is because I had such great soft skills. And so I've always been like, well, soft skills are more important because that's what I actually have. I don't have the technical skills yet. But it's true. Relating to people, connecting with people, being a good teammate, being able to convey what you're doing eloquently, being able to understand other people's problems, that's the work. The technical stuff's going to get done no matter what. Relating to people. These are human jobs we have. You're not just talking to a machine all day.
Yeah. I think that's also like the reality in business settings is like programming is a tool. Like just like Copilot is a tool. It's a means to an end. Like it's not something that's living on its own. That maybe that's reserved for your personal pet projects. But you need to find, I guess, practical solutions to real world problems as a developer.
Yeah, and you have to communicate those solutions eloquently and with enough conviction that the person believes you and agrees that that's the right solution.
So write better essays.
Write better essays, y'all. I tell you, like, one of the best things you can do is take a bunch of humanities classes because it's going to stretch your brain in a way that, like, your brain's not used to being stretched. And really, like, I agree that everyone in one concentration should try things from outside that concentration in their degree. Like, if you're an English person, you should take a few computer science courses. Honestly, I think computer science should be taught in every classroom. Every single person should know how to do a little bit of Python or something. It's out there, but it's in the American school system, it's abstracted away until you get to like high school. But like,
not that it's generally available, but it should be. Like,
I really think that because like that base level knowledge of just basic Python or basic JavaScript, something it unlocks something in you, you know, like the ability to script away things is a skill that everyone should have right now. Even as AI starts to make that easier, you still need to like understand what it's doing exactly. You know, I don't know. I feel when I think back on my education, I feel like if someone had put me into a computer science course when I was like ready for it, I would have had a completely different like path in life. I'm really happy with the path I took. Honestly, like my life is fantastic. Like I said, I got to go teach English in Korea. And like when I was an English teacher, it was full of difficulties, but I loved it. And I loved connecting with these kids and introducing them to these stories that I think are so important and carry such value. I can't help but think if someone had just taught me how to script, would I be in a better place right now? And I feel like the answer is yes, because it's a tool that has so much potential in use, you know?
I mean, like 20 years ago, you would not get a job if you would not work with Word, Excel, PowerPoint. Yeah. And probably now it's scripting. It's understanding basically how a computer works and not just using it for letter writing.
Yeah, exactly. Branch out is my advice. Try something different is my advice.
On a micro level, even within computer science, I always tell people to not only focus on one programming language, but to pick also on that really changes your way of thinking. Like if you're working with .NET or Java or something, pick some really obscure stuff like Haskell or something, because again, like you said, it unlocks something. I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. I think that education is, it needs to be taken, not like seriously is not the right word. It needs to be, we need to change the way we approach education as we're moving further and further into the 21st century. Because I saw at UCLA's graduation, there was a kid who had his laptop with him and they put him on like the Jumbotron and he was just showing off his ChatGPT prompts. And I was like, that's kind of a bummer, man. Like did you get the degree or did ChatGPT get the degree? And how does that help you really? Like we can't, I, And it's also frustrating because these kids are right. They need to get these jobs. It's a hard job market. And if they can just get the degree and get out there and get the job, then they'll be fine, hopefully. But I think we need to rethink education as a series of grades that we get that proves that we can do something, because ChatGPT can make the essay for you. ChatGPT can write the answers for you. And like, when that's available and everyone's focus is on grades, then no one's going to learn anymore. And if no one's learning anymore, then ChatGPT isn't going to change. And we're just going to listen to what ChatGPT has to say about everything.
So, and you would not be able to ask the right questions, right?
Exactly. If it's trained on all of our knowledge, what happens when we just turn to ChatGPT for our knowledge now?
Yeah. And I think in some parts we do.
It's a dangerous, heavy, confusing world out there. But yeah, I guess it always has been.
Yeah, it always has been. It's just maybe a little bit accelerated right now because it's so, as you said, like the whole AI thing so quickly adopted and like interfering with like any branch of our lives.
Yeah, it's changing everything. And I think that's always one of my favorite classes I taught when I was a teacher was a class called Mass Media. And it was literary analysis of non-literature. So we would analyze movies and TV and music and stuff that wasn't typically taught inside of a classroom. And I loved teaching movies because all of these kids in my class were very passively watching movies. And I would talk about camera angles and cuts and how music was being used to change the emotion. And I had so many kids who would come back after the class or later on and be like, yeah, I can't watch movies the same. I'm always thinking about the decisions that the director is making. I was like, good. You're supposed to be thinking about that, because if you just watch a movie and go, all right, that movie, whatever, if you're not thinking critically about it, then you're just accepting what it is and you're not considering that it's an argument. You're not considering that there is a moral or a lesson in the movie, and you're not considering how that's presented. Passively just taking in information and accepting it is a recipe for disaster. You should be critical of all the information you read, at the very least from a, what is the person who created this content, art, movie, music, essay, system of information? What is it they're trying to convey with that? And why are they trying to convey that?
Yeah. And so that's not AI, but that's like the human context of it. Everyone's talking about context right now, but I think we need a lot more context in our minds, not in our computers.
Exactly. Yeah. We need to hold on to that because we can't outsource, you know, the humanity to an AI model. And it's going to take some big changes in the future, but the change doesn't show up until the challenge that creates it. So we're going to be in a critical time and we're just going to have to see where we go. But I hope we can come together and really understand it as a tool and not as a thing that is going to just take a bunch of humanity away from us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that was interesting. Thank you so much. like you mentioned that, the applications for the student ambassadors, they're open. So what would people need to do to take part of that program?
So if you're a current university student and you're at least 18 and you are using GitHub and you want to be a GitHub campus expert, we accept one campus expert per campus. So if someone's already a campus expert on your campus, they've kind of got it. But apply.githubcampus.expert is the website. And that takes you to our application page, and it's open to the end of July. We also have a thing called the GitHub Student Developer Pack, which is a bunch of developer tools that are free for students who are verified education students. And that's if you go to education.github.com/pack, that takes you to a list of all the companies that have stuff inside of the Student Developer Pack. So what you get is you get GitHub Pro. You get access to Copilot, you get Azure credits, you get stuff from companies like AppRite, Namecheap, JetBrains, CodeDex, Educative, MongoDB, Termius, Datadog, Scrimba, 1Password, Stripe. There's all these companies that have offers inside the pack. You become a verified student. You get access to these offers from other companies, and you get to start using developer tools that right now are behind a paywall for you. So if you're a student and you want to start learning more tools outside of the classroom, the student developer pack is where it's at, education.github.com/pack. And there's a little application button right there. It takes you to the GitHub settings and you can apply to be a verified student. You essentially just prove that you're a current student at a university. Sometimes it asks for your email. Sometimes it's just your student ID, but the process is pretty straightforward. And I hope a bunch of y'all get out there and get those free developer tools. And I hope a bunch of y'all apply to be campus experts too. I would love to see y'all.
Well, that's a steal. Just one last question. That application form, is it built with issues forms?
It is not. It's built with, we built it right into .com actually, in the GitHub.com. It's in your settings.
So maybe next year.
Oh man, no, it's maybe. We'll see what we can do. We got to use the best tool, right?
Perfect. Thank you so much, PJ.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you asking me to be on here. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.